You are listening to the Sankofa Council of Milwaukee with your host, Dr. Janine James, Brother Kwasi Kraft, and Sister D.B. Compton. Sankofa Council Radio Broadcast is an affiliate of the Black Reality Think Tank, and it airs on the Time for an Awakening radio platform. Reach out to them at SankofaCouncilMKE@gmail.com. I repeat, SankofaCouncilMKE@gmail.com. All of our programs are archived, so just go to www.timeforanawakening, access the search portal, and type in the name of the program you desire to review.
This is in solidarity with our brothers and sisters in the United States. We stand with you.
We're poor, Ashe. We're poor to the creative spirit, the great Ashe out of which we all emerge, Ashe. We pour to that creative spirit by whatever name we know it, whatever name you hold in your heart, in your mind, whatever name your ancestors gave, whatever name you learned as a child, whatever name you believe it to be, whatever name you believe it to be in spirit or in science, Ashe.
Ashe.
We pour to the first human beings who came into existence on this planet, the first human beings who raised the first structures, who cooked the first meals, who taught the first children, who had the first children, the first Africans, the first people who stood upright, who walked, who figured out how to stay on this planet, who figured out how to pass that knowledge on to their children and their children's children, the mothers and fathers of civilization. Ashe.
Ashe.
We pour the next libation to their grandchildren, their children's children, those who raised the great early civilizations of Kemet and Kush and Monomotapa, the great medieval civilizations of Ghana and Mali and Songhai and Kanem-Bornu. We pour to those who raised the great civilizations of the Igbo people and the Hausa people and the Kikongo people and the Mbara people, the great Mande civilizations, the great Kikongo, the great civilizations of Southern Africa, the Bantu people, the great civilizations of Southeast Africa, the Dinka, the Shilluk, the Nuer. We pour to those millions who raised the foundations from which the world would learn what it meant to be human in the world, Ashe.
Ashe.
We pour to their children who, upon the arrival on the shores of people they had never seen before, found themselves captured and marched overland, found themselves perishing by the millions before they were held on the holding cells and the open air pens on the coast of West, Central, Southern, and East Africa. We pour to the ancestors who did not know as they were stripped of all clothing and sent denuded into boats, packed like animals and strewn their bones across the floor of the Atlantic and the Indian Ocean. We pour to them who in the last moment on Africa grabbed the sand and grabbed the dirt and put it in their mouths and understood that the only thing they might have to preserve their place in that continent was their memory of that place and their ability to pass it on to their children. We pour to them. Ashe.
Ashe.
We pour to those Africans and their children who, finding themselves cast adrift in Santiago, Cuba, who found themselves cast adrift in Puerto Spain, Trinidad, and Port-au-Prince, Haiti, who found themselves cast adrift in New Orleans and Charleston and Mobile, who found themselves cast adrift in Salvador, Bahia, who found themselves cast adrift in Barbados and the archipelago that formed the Wayward and the Windward Coast. We found them in these places learning Portuguese and Spanish and French, whose often first words was, "Oh my God," or "Madre de Dios," who found themselves praying to survive and pass on to their children the memories. We pour to those ancestors who are represented in the thousands buried in all the square miles of where we stand and who sit here buried before us in 400 caskets forged of wood from West Africa with Adinkra symbols. Each one of them, each woman, man, and child, symbolic of millions. The children of those who could not be killed, we pour, Ashe.
Ashe.
We pour to their children who somehow survived the hells of enslavement and fought for emancipation in the Caribbean, the French, British, Dutch Caribbean, who fought for emancipation in South America, who fought for emancipation in Central America, who fought the struggles we refer to as the Civil War in the United States, who came out of that, marched out of enslavement through Reconstruction, and found themselves making great migrations, eventually ending up in places like New York. Their children's children, who making a way for themselves became our great-great-grandparents, our grandparents, our great-grandparents, our parents. Those who, when the first bones were discovered in this space, held their hands and said, "Stop! No more! We are here to speak for those who can no longer speak with their mouths." We pour for those ancestors, some of whom came to Howard University in 2004 and followed these caskets all the way back to New York. We pray to the great ancestors, the ones whose names we know and the ones whose names we don't. And at this moment, as we pour this libation, I would ask anyone who feels comfortable to say the name of someone in your bloodline who is no longer physically here, but who you know made it possible for you to be here. Go ahead, let's hear the names.
Haywood Carr.
Porter Griffin.
Thomas Lee Jr.
Evelyn Glover.
We pour to the names that we hold collectively. Ganga Zumba in Brazil. Toussaint Louverture, Jean-Jacques Dessalines, and Henri Christophe in Haiti. We pour to the great Avengers, Nanny of the Maroons of Jamaica. We pour to the great ancestors, Harriet Tubman, Sojourner Truth, Frederick Douglass. Say the names that you study. Who are the names of the ancestors that you have come to hold in your heart and your mind as you hope that you can do what they did for us for your children and children's children. Let's say some of those famous names.
Kwame Ture, Honorable Elijah Muhammad,
John Henry Clark, John Dr. Jackson, Muhammad. Jacob Carruthers. And finally, two final libations. We pour to those who make it possible for us to do what we do. We pour to these rangers who stand guardian over this sacred space. We pour to these Africans and these folks who have come from Howard University, the staff, the faculty, the administrators who brought us here today to bear witness. This is not a libation, but an affirmation, because their hearts still beat, their tongues still speak, their minds still think, and their minds still wish the best for us. We pour for all of those people who surrounded us on this journey today and made it possible for us to be here. We pour this affirmation of thanks, Ashe.
Ashe.
And finally, we pour to your children's children's children who will one day stand on this space and speak your name.
History is a clock that people use to tell their political and cultural time of day. It is also a compass that people use to find themselves on the map of human geography. History tells of people where they have been and what they have been, where they are and what they are. Most important, history tells a people where they still must go, what they still must be. The relationship of history to the people is the same as the relationship of a mother to her child.
Welcome.
Thank you.
You are listening to the Sankofa Council of Milwaukee with your host, Dr. Janine James, Brother Kwasi Kraft, and Sister D.B. Compton. Sankofa Council Radio Broadcast is an affiliate of the Black Reality Think Tank, and it airs on the Time for an Awakening radio platform. Reach out to them at SankofaCouncilMKE@gmail.com. I repeat, SankofaCouncilMKE@gmail.com. All of our programs are archived, so just go to www.timeforanawakening, access the search portal, and type in the name of the program you desire to review.
Welcome. This is Dr. Janine James from the Sankofa Council of Milwaukee, and I'm here with our other host, Brother.
I'll take that, Doctor.
All right. Boy, you get there. And also, Sister Conley, we are so happy here, and I'm happy because not only is our guest a fabulous doctor, but she's also a good friend of mine. And so I am just so excited that she is here with us, Dr. Renee Settle Robinson. And she told us she wanted us to talk about Get on the Good Foot. So that was the song she put on because that is her mantra. And foot health is key to whole body health. Learn from our an ankle and leg specialist the secrets of pretty feet. My mother was seen by Dr. Settle Robinson, made her feet look so good. She said she was always being these sandals. She was happy to show her feet off after Dr. Settle Robinson took care of her. She is our guest here today, and even though the feet don't really take up much body space for us, where are we without our feet? And I tell you, I was particularly excited as I was reading about the field of podiatry, which was formerly called chiropody. They were talking about podiatrists back in Egyptian time. In the pyramids, there were some pyramids that held the bodies of esteemed foot doctors back in those days, and they were talking about the importance, the role that they played in keeping us going. But I'm also concerned about some other issues that relate to our feet, our ankles, and our legs, and Dr. Settle Robinson is going to be the one to put us where we need to be on this subject. But this is also that great time that we want to turn to our Sister Didi. And Sister Didi, are you going to tell us something about the our ancestral profile today?
Well, I'm going to be Sister Didi today. This is your brother Kwasi. I'm subbing in for Sister Didi, so I hope I do a good job. And I am going to do that ancestral profile. It's going to be on Dr. Mildred Dixon. Okay.
Oh.
Yes. So right. What we're talking about now: a lifetime spent blazing trails for minority women and a profession of our. And that's our story about Dr. Dixon begins with two elements that are vital to student success, support and encouragement. Mildred Dixon used that support and encouragement to change the world of pediatric medicine for minority women and in the United States. Now, after graduating from dental nursing school, Dr. Dixon began working for Dr. Gilborn, a dentist in Montclair, New Jersey. Now, he saw something special in Mildred and encouraged her to continue her medical studies. Along the way, he also introduced her to podiatrists. Now, at the time, referred to as chiropodists. Now, Dr. Helen Hawthorne Hawthorne was a graduate of Ohio College of Chiropractic at OCC, which is now known as KSU-CPM. At the encouragement of Hawthorne, Mildred applied at OCC and was accepted. Now, Mildred was a dedicated student, but at times they were tough and they weren't very many students there in their day. Now, at one point, she ran out of money and notified Dr. M.S. Hermalin, now, who at the time served as the OCC Dean of Faculty and was a member of the Board of Trustees. Now, he told her not to worry about it, and Dixon said, he set up a payment plan for me and told me all I had was to continue to concentrate on my studies. Now, this support allowed Dixon to finish her education, and she graduated during the onset of World War II. Now, after graduating, she traveled a long road, beginning with a trip to Tuskegee, Alabama, to visit her friends. There, she met husband James O. Dixon, who was a faculty member at Tuskegee University. Now, the marriage instantly made her part of a university community. The university family included many professionals from other parts of the U.S. and beyond who had become to Tuskegee for the same reason, Dixon said, and shared the vision to improve the life of Negroes. Now, Mildred Dixon became instrumental in making this a vision and reality. Despite having passed the Alabama board and obtaining her license, Dixon was unable to join the Alabama Association of Chiropractors at ACC. On the National Association of Chiropractors, the NAC, currently American Podiatric Medical Association, at that time, minority chiropractors were denied access of both organizations as not only a woman, but an African-American woman in the post-war. Now, Deep South, during a time when segregation and discrimination ran rampant, it would have been easy for her to give up. Now, Mildred Dixon did not give up, not willing to settle for being denied access to the AAC in 1949. Dixon petitioned the NAC headquarters in Washington, D.C., and was given a lifetime membership in the national organization, which allowed her to practice podiatry in the state of Alabama. Now, Mildred's action surely influenced an August 1965 historic milestone. An amendment was passed at the ACA convention, changing bylaws to state that no person otherwise qualified for any classification of membership would be denied such membership for reasons of race, creed, or national origin. While working towards these equal rights, Dixon was also working towards building a remarkable career. In 1956, she was appointed as the first full-time female African-American podiatrist at the Tuskegee Veterans Administration Hospital. Now, at that time of her employment, the Tuskegee VA was a teaching hospital established for the care of more than 300,000 Black veterans. Tuskegee was the place where the brightest Blacks, male and female, were recruited for Tuskegee VA Hospital to join the A. Andrew Memorial Hospital in Tuskegee University, Dixon said. It was there that I was encouraged to share my knowledge and dream of a future for my career. While with the Tuskegee VA, Dixon created the first podiatric residency in the state of Alabama. Podiatry residents in the program were required to rotate with traditional medicine schools, medical schools, and residents through various hospital departments. At the time, many people, including some healthcare professionals, were unaware of the role of the podiatrist in patient care. Now, Dixon said the residency program not only assisted students, but also served as a public relations bureau for podiatry. Now, Dixon was finds it tremendously rewarding that to this day, the residency program continues to thrive. And also while employed with the Tuskegee VA, Dixon established podiatry clinics at VA hospitals throughout the state of Alabama, specifically the VA hospital, Tuscaloosa, and the VA hospital in Montgomery. Remarkably, her contributions to her professions, to her gender, to the minorities and others didn't stop there. While Dixon attended podiatry school at the cost was approximately $2,000 per year. Today, the tuition is more than $35,000 per year. With few podiatry scholarships available to help students defer costs, Dixon remembered the support she received as a student and knew she wanted to help others in a similar way. Now, when I decided to create an endowment, there was never a question of where, Dixon said. It was simply a matter of when. And in April 2016, to honor Dr. Dixon, has accomplished, she and her daughter, Denise Dixon, created the Dr. Mildred Dixon Endowed Scholarship of Podiatric Medicine. Giving back to you, Alma, giving back to your alma mater, can help a student gain a valuable asset in education. Now, Dixon said it can also play a role in determining the future and continuation of the program at the university. Now, Dixon hopes this scholarship will not only help defray some of the cost of deserving podiatry students, but also help support KSU CPM, but also that it also reminds us that each recipient of the journey of podiatrics profession, which continues to be a passion for her today, podiatry can provide a rewarding career, Dixon said. The importance of physical fitness today places emphasis on activities, exercises, depends on our feet. So feet are often ignored or taken for granted. Now, when they are one of the most important parts of our body, Dr. Dixon lived to 102. She passed in 2018, and through her endowment, she's ensured her story of student encouragement and support will continue. So this is Dr. Mildred Dixon, and we just thank her for all her contributions. And I will turn it over to Dr. James, but before I do, I would just like to remind you to please mute your phones. Be aware that your mics are very sensitive and the background sounds will be heard during the program. So again, please mute your phones and be aware that the mics are very sensitive. All right. Thank you. Go ahead, Dr. James.
Well, thank you so much, Brother Kwasi. And that history is certainly very inspiring. It's inspiring to know that she lived to be 102 and continued to volunteer through much of her life. And we've got somebody who is walking in the footsteps. And this is really the thing that we try to stress with our program. We have our ancestral profile to give us a sense of our history. And we've got some people that have been following those steps. And we have with us today Dr. Renee Settle Robinson. She is a board certified podiatrist. She is a podiatric surgeon. Not only a podiatric surgeon, she is foot and ankle specialist. She is the first Black female to be residency trained in foot and ankle surgery in the state of Illinois and is among the first 5 Black females in the United States. She graduated from Loyola Marymount College University with a BS in biology and received her doctorate in podiatric medicine from the California College of Podiatric Medicine. Dr. Settle Robinson is one of those people who's got multiple talents and skills. She was formerly a registered nurse, and I mean a registered nurse from the age of 20 years old. But that experience helped to afford her financing for her academic endeavors. Dr. Settle Robinson practiced in Chicago initially, prior to teaching at the Shoal School of or College of Podiatric Medicine for 4 years, and then she moved to Milwaukee, which is where I had the privilege to meet her in 1994, and there she settled. Dr. Settle Robinson is working currently full-time in a federally qualified healthcare center called Outreach Community Health Center in Milwaukee on Milwaukee's north side. She is active in her great sorority, Zeta Phi Beta Sorority Incorporated. And Dr. Settle Robinson has many interests as well as talents. She ran for Wisconsin State Assembly in 2004, achieving 45% of the popular vote. She ran again in 2008, achieving 42% of the popular vote. She was also on the ballot with our Barack Obama. She is a great cook, mastering the use of spices, and when she is not holding a scalpel, which she loves to do, she uses her hands to make unique jewelry and masters the use of those spices in her kitchen to serve her. How many children is that, Dr. Settle Robinson?
Eight children.
How many?
Eight children.
Okay. I had it right. I didn't want to miss anybody. And her numerous grandchildren. I had the opportunity to deliver her youngest child, so she's very special to me. Her favorite quote, obstacles are what you see when you take your eyes off the goal. She doesn't ever close her eyes. So Dr. Settle Robinson, please welcome to our program. Say hi.
Oh my God, Dr. Janine James, that is the most fabulous introduction I have ever had my entire life. makes me wonder if I'm really all that fabulous. Oh, goodness. Well, thank you so much for that. The only correction I would like to extend, because I definitely would not want to take away from the significant contributions of people like Dr. Mildred Dixon, and there were many that came even before her. But the difference was those foot doctors were denied the opportunity to do residency training in foot surgery. And when I came along, I was among the first five Black women in the entire country to be residency trained in foot surgery. And I was the first one in the state of Illinois. So that's where the one of five comes in. It's in the surgical training, because as you identified so well, Brother Kwasi, that she had gotten her license in the state of Alabama, Dr. Dixon, and still was not able to practice because she had to also be a member of the organization of podiatrists nationwide as well as locally. And thankfully, the nationwide organization went on and gave her membership, but the local organization denied it, and that's kind of typical of the Deep South back in those days and time. The National Medical Association formed in 1895. For similar reasons, we had so few Black doctors back then, but the few that we had could not enter the profession without membership, so the NMA said, we will form that membership in a national organization, but it was a national organization of Black doctors. And so I do not want to take away in any way, shape, or form from the contribution that Dr. Mildred Dixon made. As a matter of fact, I very fondly remember it as the only Black student in my class at the California College of Podiatric Medicine in San Francisco, California. I drove all the way across the country by myself to make sure that I went to the home of Dr. Mildred Dixon, located in Tuskegee, Alabama, to sit up under her tutelage. And she made tea for me in a pot, And it was so rich and wonderful. I make my tea like that to this day. So I had the benefit of sitting us under her tutelage back in the day. So I very much love and honor and respect Dr. Mildred Dixon and all that she contributed to the profession, because she paved the way that opened the door for me.
And I think that is so powerful, a message for all of us to learn, that we have ancestors to stand on. And I think it is exciting that you really took the opportunity to personally meet this luminary physician and get a chance to sit with her and talk with her in person. So I'm sure that was a life-altering experience for you.
It really was. It really was. And even after I finished all of my training and got into private practice, I mean, you need to know that the first day you walk into your office, it's not overflowing with patients. People don't even know you're there the first day. And so it takes a while for your practice to build up. So anybody that has the impression that a brand new doctor is automatically rich because they have DR in front of your name, get a clue. They're struggling to get on their feet. And so in the early phases of my career, when I didn't have that many patients, I would then leave my office and go to the offices of those Blackfoot doctors that were located in the Chicago area where I started my practice, and visit with them and learn from them. One of the people that I met graduated from the Illinois College of Podiatric Medicine back in 1922. And at that point, it was the late 80s. And they said she had been practicing for like 70 years or more. And she was 92 years old. And I said, wow. I want to follow you and see what you do, because she was still practicing. And I said, Doc, I'm just curious to know, you're 92 years old. Why are you still practicing? She said, baby, she said, you can come to my office and I'll show you, but I want you to drive for me. She said, because 6 months ago I was in a car accident at 91 or 92 years old in a car accident, driving to her office to see patients and take care of their feet. And ultimately, she said, my patients kissed my hands and put $100 bills in my pocket. I can't give that up. And I said, shoot, I know you're right. When I'm 92 years old, if I'm still able to, I'll be taking care of somebody's feet, especially if they kissed my hands and put $100 bills in my pocket. So there were things that she taught me how to do with the instruments that I was trained to use, that nobody trained me to use it in the way that she did. She had skills. And so she was another person that I very much admire and was grateful to spend time with. A third person I just want to give significant mention to, his sons are part of Earth, Wind, and Fire. He had two sons. One was named after him, and the other one was his son by marriage. And, why can't I call his name? Who named the people that are in Earth, Wind, and Fire? There was one who was real tall, dark complected, and played the guitar, and it seemed like he could never stop jumping. Verdine Adams. So Verdine Adams' daddy, because he was named after his daddy, Dr. Verdine Adams, was located at Rush Presbyterian St. Luke's, and he got a segue into that position because he was a lab technician, but because of his doctorate degree, they made him in charge of the lab. So he was in charge of the lab for like 35 years, and in exchange for some of the increases that maybe he would have gotten had he not been Black. Who's got all that stuff going on in the background? Because I can hardly hear over all that noise. But anyway, so in exchange for some of the increases that he probably would have gotten had he been of another skin color, he said, okay, if you can't give me an increase in my pay, then what I would like for you to do is set me up with an office. So he had an office as a podiatrist at Rush Presbyterian St. Luke's, and I was able to spend a day shadowing him and observing his skills in the clinic. And he, too, is a remarkable podiatrist. Very remarkable podiatrist. At one point, he told me, yeah, my boys are talking about having a studio in Chicago so they can be close to their daddy. He was a great man, too. Great podiatrist, but also a significant contribution to society through the success of his children, even though they didn't exactly follow in his footsteps. So I've been very blessed to know some pretty remarkable people. One of the people that I was introduced to when I was in college, I took college classes while I was still in high school. I didn't even know it was possible to do that, but I found out that you could. So I took full advantage of it. I had 21 units of college work finished by the time I got my high school diploma. And there was a lady in the college level that said, you're doing so well with your college classes, you can take whatever classes you want to. And I ended up being the grand marshal of the graduation when I got my AA degree from the community college in Los Angeles that's comparable to MATC here in Milwaukee. And 21 units of college work is one-third of the total amount you need to get your AA degree. So imagine being one-third of the way finished for your AA degree by the time you graduate from high school and get your high school diploma. So, yes, I was a busy little sister. But she told me that I need to think about being a podiatrist. And at 17 years old, I really didn't know what in the world that was. I couldn't hardly pronounce it. And I know there's only a difference between a O and a E in pediatric versus podiatric, and so there's a little bit of confusion there. So I wasn't taking care of children like a pediatrician would be taken care of. I would be taking care of feet as the podiatrist would be doing. And so she said, yeah, I know this guy, and he will be happy to welcome you to his office and teach you about the profession. And she says, he's in my bridge club. And at 17 years old, I really didn't know any better. And I said, thanks, but I'll get back with you later. I had no clue that I would end up crossing paths with him down the road. So if there's such a thing as divine intervention, the good Lord directed my path and made sure that if I didn't have sense enough to follow through with the lady when I was 17, that I ended up meeting him at the National Medical Association Convention when I was 21 years old. And he ended up writing my letter of recommendation to get into podiatry school. And when they saw his letter of recommendation, they said, hey, with his letter of recommendation, you are in as far as we are concerned, but you need to make sure that you dot all your I's and cross all your T's so they don't say we let you in without having the same credentials and paperwork in place as everybody else. Because he was the president of the California Podiatry Association, the first Black to serve in that capacity, and was very highly respected and regarded throughout the profession. I remembered him telling me, don't go into this profession unless you plan on working, because apparently he too had experiences, maybe a little different, but similar to what Brother Kwasi described Dr. Dixon having gone through, and he wanted to make sure that I would be willing to take it to the next level. And I promised him I will. If given the opportunity to be a podiatrist, I would definitely do everything in my power to make that difference. So I definitely stand on the shoulders of all those giants.
Well, thank
you. That is awesome.
And for those inspiring points that you brought out today. But I want us to go on to some important areas, and what does podiatry mean for the African American community? I know that everybody has been to probably a dentist, and they've seen their pediatrician, as you say, but many of us, unfortunately, may not make it to see a podiatrist until we have a problem. And so I want us to be able to learn, if you are going to share with us, what is it that the African American community needs to know about foot health, and especially what is it that will lead to helping us to prevent the many of us who have suffered amputations. And I think it's important for our listeners to learn more about that. So Dr. Robinson, take it from there for us, please.
I'd be happy to. Thank you so much. You know, the feet are the one part of your body that's farther from your heart than any other part of your body. If you know that your heart is in your chest, between your breasts, you look at your hands and see how far they are from your heart, they go out a pretty good distance. But when you look at how far your blood has to travel before it gets to your feet, there's no other body part that's farther from the heart than your feet. Your feet play such a significant role that I think an old foot doctor put it real well when I was in training, and I've never forgotten the way he put it because it was so profound. He said, people die from the feet up, which let me know that the importance of observing and examining feet was so significant, because I would know based on an examination of their feet whether or not they were in good shape or getting close to dying. I mean, statistically, if a person has ended up with an amputation, you can live without your feet. But generally speaking, within about 5 years of an amputation, that person is dead. And so the whole idea of people dying from the feet up is significant. So why amputations? Amputations have causes that are related to diabetes. Amputations have causes related to smoking. Amputations have causes that are related to poor diet as well. And if you're guilty of any one of those, or maybe checking off all of those boxes, you're going to be closer to getting an amputation than anybody else. Now, the diet, you can change. The smoking, you can quit. The diabetes is one of those things that if you have it, you just need to learn how to live with it or suffer the consequences. But 50% of all people with amputations have those amputations from doing active things, not from having any of those conditions. Maybe somebody ran over their foot accidentally with the lawnmower. Maybe they had a car accident and their foot got mangled in the car accident. There's any number of active things that people do, and 50% of all amputations are related to those active things. So I like to remind people that are going through an amputation for some of the, for sake of a better word, I'm going to say inactive things like smoking, diabetes, and diet issues, that you're in good company because you're joining a rank of people who have had amputations, and 50% of them are not related to what you went through. So I think that's an important point to make, because sometimes people think that the only way you get an amputation is because you're a diabetic. No, all people with amputations are not diabetic, and that's not the reason for everybody's amputation.
Well, I'm glad you brought that point up because I had a sister-in-law who we kept thinking had diabetes, but she didn't. She was a smoker, and she lost one leg, and about 10 years later, she lost the second leg. And just as you described, within a year or two of losing that second leg, she was dead. So I'm glad you brought that point up.
Yeah, well, the way I describe it to people so that they have a better understanding of what's going on, aside from the fact that their feet are farther from their heart than any other part of the body, imagine the size of the blood vessel coming directly off of the heart, and it's got to shoot that blood through your body's pipe system or artery or blood vessels, whatever way you want to refer to it. And the further away from your heart you go, the smaller and smaller and smaller are the blood vessels. And just like you have nothing but plain old water coming through your pipes at home, you know, the last time you visited Aunt Ethel and it took a whole hour to fill up her tub because there was barely a trickle of water getting through her pipe. Very much like a plumber would go in and either play Roto-Rooter and clean out the inside of the pipe so that the water will flow again, or maybe open up the wall and put in some new pipes and connect it up, close up the wall, and now she can run a tub of water in about 5 minutes as opposed to an hour and a half. We have blood vessels that run through our body, and it carries the blood to all the different body parts. And the farthest away it has to travel is your feet. And so even though there's nothing going through those pipes but plain old blood, after so many years, those pipes get clogged up. That's why your primary care doctor is always checking your cholesterol, checking your triglycerides, checking all of the things that can clog up the blood vessels. And if you get to the point where you're not getting good blood flow to your feet, then we send you to a vascular specialist, and basically they are glorified plumbers for the body. They find out, well, where is the blockage in your blood vessels? And either they play Roto-Rooter and do what they call an angioplasty, or they open up the body and find out where is the blockage, and then go above the blockage and put an artificial blood vessel in and go below the level of that blockage and reattach it where the blood vessels might be pretty decent, you know, past that blockage. And that's what is called a bypass surgery. So I know a lot of people have heard the term bypass surgery. It's just another plumber's technique, so to speak, that vascular surgeons would use. And then, of course, there's another one where they stick a tube down inside of the blood vessel and then blow up a balloon to open up the center of the blood vessel, what they call a balloon angioplasty. Whenever you hear that term angio, they're talking about the blood vessel. And plasty just is the suffix that means we're fixing it. So they open up the blood vessels that way. And sometimes, instead of just doing the balloon, they stick in something that looks like the reverse of a Chinese finger trap. And when they release it, it opens up the blood vessel, but it stays there. And that's called a stent, like the word tent, like people would use to go camping, with an S in front of it. It's called stent. And so there's different techniques. And I remembered having a conversation with a vascular specialist one day. And I said, so which one of those techniques is the best? He said, they're all the best because they all accomplish the successful response of restoring blood flow. And so he said it's like on any given day, depending on how he feels, he'll use one technique or another. If he feels like there's some reason why one feels like it would be better than the other. So, you know, vascular specialists depend a certain degree on that divine intervention. It's almost like, oh, okay, Lord, which one for this one? Because you know all of them work. but you want to use the one that's going to be the best for that particular individual. And so I just thought that was fascinating, you know, that they have all these different ways of restoring the blood flow to the feet. And I've had several circumstances where there was a patient who had very poor blood flow to their feet and were at risk for amputation, and the vascular specialist was able to restore that blood flow using any one of those techniques. Like I said, they're glorified plumbers, and they get that blood flow into the feet again, and the world is great. And I love them because they keep me in business, because like I tell patients, as long as you have your feet, I've got something to work on, because that's all I work on is feet. And the moment your feet are removed, that cuts me out of the job. And so I don't get to keep you as the patient when you don't have a foot for me to work on. And I tell my other colleagues, if any of your patients have one or two feet, send them to me. And they always kind of chuckle when I say one or two feet, because they're like, yeah, what's up with that? But if they just have one foot, don't you think they want at all costs to hold on to at least that one foot if they couldn't have held on?
Oh, yes. Yeah.
Well, Doc,
we're going to have to go to our sponsor with that, and then we'll come back to you.
Okay.
All right.
Okay, thank you.
Okay, our sponsor announcement, EDOC Advice. It is a website created to go to get answers to your health or medical concerns. Now, the questions are answered by health professionals, those who are knowledgeable about helping you make decisions about your personal health that make sense to you, at www.edocadvice.com. Now, sponsors are welcome. Do you have a service you want others to know about? Have you written a book we need to read? Consider becoming a sponsor. Email the Black Reality Think Tank at Sankofa_think@outlook.com. Contributions to support our broadcasting efforts can be made to Cash App, NIRVANAINSTI, and PayPal, Sankofa. All right. We're also going to ask you, because we are getting some sound, so please mute your phones. Be aware that the mics are very sensitive. Background sounds will be heard so during the program, so if you can watch that. And also, we're going to open up the line so you can call in when we come back from the break. The number is 215-490-9832. That's 215-490-9832. And if you have any questions or comments and you're just listening, you can also email questions to us at Sankofa Council Milwaukee, MKE, at gmail.com. That's Sankofa Council MKE at gmail.com. Okay, and so we'll be going to our first break at top of the hour, 7 o'clock. We'll, again, look forward to some phone calls from questions or comments at 215-490-9832.
I'm a living dog. if you smoke, push it. I got the haze. And if you're hungry, girl, I got the lace.
For an awakening media lineup. All about times or Eastern Standard. On Mondays from 11 a.m. to 1 p.m. African Perspective with host Brother Oshie. On Monday evening from 6 p.m. to 8 p.m. Acres of Diamonds with host Brother Jihad Ahmed. On Monday evenings from 8 to 9 p.m., Black Therapy Central with hosts Dr. Mawaya Cambone and Sister Nataki Cambone. On Monday evenings from 9 to 10 p.m., on the first and third Mondays of each month, Conversation Reparations. Conversation Reparations. On Tuesday evening, from 8 to 10 p.m., Black Reality Think Tank with host Dr. William Rogers. On Wednesday, 11 a.m. to 1 p.m., African Perspectives with host Brother Ocean. On Fridays, from 11 a.m. to 1 p.m., African Perspectives with host Brother Ocean. From 8 to 10 p.m. on Friday evenings, Time for an Awakening with host Brother Elliot Booker and his co-host Brother Richard. On Saturday, from 4 p.m. to 6 p.m., Black Sister Talk with host LaWanda Chambers. And at 7 p.m. to 9 p.m. on Saturday evening, the Sankofa Council of Milwaukee with host Dr. Janine James, Brother Kwasi Kraft, and Sister D.D. Conley. And on Sunday from 7 p.m. to 9 p.m., Time for an Awakening, host Brother Elliot and his co-host Brother Richard. These are our lineup times. We thank you for your patronage, and please, by all means, check us out. You are listening to the Sankofa Council of Milwaukee with your host, Dr. Janine James, Brother Kwasi Kraft, and Sister D.D. Conley. Sankofa Council Radio Broadcast is an affiliate of the Black Reality Think Tank, and it airs on the Time for an Awakening radio platform. Reach out to them at Sankofa Council MKE at gmail.com. I repeat, Sankofa Council MKE at gmail.com. All of our programs are archived, so just go to www.timeforanawakening, access the search portal, and type in the name of the program you desire to review.
Welcome. We're so happy to have you with us today, and we are talking about feet. That's right, feet today. And we look like we've got someone who might have a comment for us. If you call us at 215-490-9832, and I see 334 414, do you have a question or a comment for us?
Yes, good evening, Dr. James. How are you? This is Theodore from Montgomery, Alabama. And it's a pleasure to hear Dr. Robinson. Thank you for your presentation. I'm curious to know a couple of things real quickly. One, is there such a thing called feet reading? You know, we have palmistry and astrology, right? So is there such a thing called feet readings, or I guess if there's such a word for it, and also, could you talk basically about the relationship between various types of foods and cracked heels, if you could? And I'll be listening. Thank you for picking my call.
Thank you.
Okay.
For calling
us. Okay. If I could go ahead and respond to the first one, which is there such a thing as feet readings, like they have palm readers that can predict your future and so on and so forth. There's, to the best of my knowledge, no such thing, but get a little too hard up for some money and you need a creative way to create some income stream, you could certainly run that game. But the closest I come to feet reading is being able to look at the health of your feet and your potential for living a long time. Anybody that has good circulation of their feet and they're not smoking or living their life in such a way that they're trying to hurry up and die. In other words, if their feet are in good condition as far as their circulation is concerned, I generally will tell them you're doing a good job of taking care of yourself and your feet, and that is an indication to me that you're going to live a very long time. Now, a person that doesn't have good circulation in their feet and they're busy smoking, and I tell them, you know, you need to let those cigarettes go, and they tell me, this is all I have to deal with my issues with stress. and so I'm going to keep on smoking. And I said, hold up now, partner. If you don't deal with your stress some other way, you're going to have some new stress when you end up with your foot amputated. And still, they don't want to hear any of that. They want to keep smoking their cigarettes. So those are the ones that I can almost reassure, okay, you continue the way you're doing, your life is going to be a little shorter than the rest of us. So that's the closest I come to feet reading, if there is such a thing. Now, as far as what foods contribute to cracked heels, well, generally speaking, people end up with cracked heels because their feet are way too dry.
You really need that way other body tape.
I'm sorry, what'd you say?
I think we have some background noise. If people, if you could just mute your phones.
Okay. So anyway, the way they get the cracked heels is because their skin tends to be way too dry, and perhaps improper shoe gear contributes to excessive stress on the heels that causes the skin to build up extra thickness because of that extra stress on the heels from improperly fitted shoes. So it's not necessarily diet, it's just dry skin and neglect of the feet on one form or another with regard to the quality of the shoes that they're wearing and whether or not they bathe and moisturize their feet on a regular basis. I look at some feet and I ask them, you know, do you bathe regularly? And they tell me, oh, yeah, I take a shower every day. And I said, well, baby, looking at your feet, it looks like you've been baptized in your feet. Jump in the shower. Ah, I got wet. And jump right back out and dry off without ever getting soap and water and scrubbing in between the toes and all over the feet to knock off that dead skin so it accumulates after so long. Those are the ones I have to send to the Sally's Beauty Supply or maybe Kohl's Department Store or one of those places where they make those bath gloves that you put on your hands and dip them in the water. If you sit in a tub of water and let your feet and your whole body soak, you can dip those bath gloves on your hands into the water so that they get wet. Get some soap and rub it between your hands so that the bath gloves become soapy. And use your hands to just scrub all that dead skin off of your feet. And if you do that regularly and make sure you moisturize Vaseline if you don't have anything else to use, and keep your feet moisturized on a regular basis, you can minimize, if not eliminate, that issue. And, you know, of course, make sure you get some decent shoes.
So, in the question about reading feet, I've heard the expression or procedure called reflexology. Does that have something to do with the feet? Are you familiar with that?
Okay, so reading the feet, like I said, to me sounded like, you know, somebody trying to predict your future based on reading the palm of your hand. You know, you're going to have 6 children, you're going to get married, but your husband's going to die, you know, all that kind of stuff. So that's what I interpreted when he said reading feet. But in terms of reflexology, that's a totally different thing where you find pressure points in the foot that are related to the nerves that terminate from your brain down your spine through the sciatic nerve that goes into your leg that terminates into your feet in different places, and they can press in those areas. And what they claim to be able to do with the reflexology is touch those areas and stop you from getting headaches or help your digestion or do some other things by touching the feet. And I am personally not experienced enough to say that reflexology works or it doesn't, because that's not anywhere within my realm of expertise.
Okay. Thank you.
I wanted to add on a little bit more information about why people end up with amputations from the non-exciting or traumatic reasons. and in fact get it with the diabetes, the smoking, and the diet. Diabetes, especially when you don't control your blood sugar to a normal range, ages your circulation in dog years. So instead of 1 year of your life, poorly controlled diabetes, the effect that it has on your circulation, particularly in the feet, is the equivalent of 7 years of aging of your blood vessels. Now, if you didn't have diabetes and all you were doing is smoking, smoking also ages your circulation in dog years. So if you're diabetic and you're smoking, you're aging your circulation in double dog years. I saw a mother and a daughter, diabetes runs in their family. Mama was, of course, a little bit further down the road than the daughter, but the daughter was smoking cigarettes. Both mother and daughter got into trouble with their feet, interestingly enough, right around the same time. Mama just had a big toe amputated. Daughter had to have half of her foot amputated and then ended up dying, you know, a couple of years later. And what was the difference between mama and daughter? Both of them had diabetes. Maybe they weren't doing that great of a job controlling their diabetes, but the daughter smoked on top of being diabetic, and so that made her accelerate her aging of her circulation well past her mother's years, and she ended up with a lot more significant problems than her mom. So think about what you're doing to your body when you smoke cigarettes and when you let your blood sugar just stay out of control.
That's so helpful, Dr. Settle Robinson. I greatly appreciate your explaining for us some of the techniques that have been developed to try to salvage a damaged circulation that could contribute to an amputation. And I had the to go through that experience with my aunt who had diabetes and, as you know, had an amputation of a toe. And we worked very diligently utilizing some of that technology, attempting to salvage her leg. But I have often been concerned when we look at racial inequities in healthcare about how many of us may have ended with having been advised to have an amputation. And I'm glad that we're here talking about the fact that there may be, and I guess a lot of it has to do how severe abnormal the blood vessels are, but at least for our listeners to know that there are some procedures that may not be offered to us. And I don't know what some of the research and studies have been done in terms of African Americans, and are they even offered some of these procedures that are limb salvaging versus making the recommendation directly for amputation. Maybe I'm being a little overly suspicious, but if I think about so many other aspects of healthcare, I cannot help but consider that some of that may be going on with us. Dr. Robinson, do you know anything about that?
You know, I agree with you totally, but I also recognize that it takes two to tango. It's one thing if it's not offered. It's another thing if it's not accepted or if it's not even looked for in the first place. So I see challenges on both sides of that equation. We need doctors to be a little bit more compassionate and a little bit more down to earth in their explanations to help people understand what it is they actually need to do and why they need to do it, but then they have to be willing to respond to those recommendations, even if they say thank you, but no thank you. Go to another doctor, another person whose opinion you respect, and find out, are they saying the same thing, or are they saying something totally different? So we know all doctors were not created equal. We have some that are remarkably great and others that, you know, it makes you wonder, how did they get their license? Maybe just because they were white. I don't know. But you need to be willing to go the distance and get the extra opinion so that you get what you need to do. Like somebody wanted to know, how is it that men tend to have more problems or are worse off than the women? And I tease my husband sometimes because when he uses the, what's that device that people use in the car to help you find an address that you're looking for? GPS. I told him we need to change the voice of the GPS to a man's voice. Because if a woman says, turn right at the next corner, he's going past that corner like she didn't say anything. Because he's not doing anything that a woman tells him to do. But if I change the voice to a man's voice, I can guarantee he will find every location he's seeking. So certain amount of that, certain amount of that is on the side of the person that's receiving the information. Sometimes people have the opinion that if you're a black doctor, I'm not going to really listen to you because you're not a real doctor. Whereas people who, like Dr. James and I, have been through it, we know we had to be twice as good to get half the credit that we got to get where we are today. Whereas, you know, some of those white ones, they got through just because, you know, they, you know. But anyway, sometimes there's the feeling that, you know, because you're a woman, you couldn't possibly be as good of a doctor as a man, because there are those things that people were raised with. And so I'm not blaming the individual, because we are all products of the environment under which we were raised. And so sometimes we just need either grandma to come with us, or somebody else in the family that can say, wait a minute now, I'm listening with a different set of ears, and I'm with you, and I'm watching out for you and watching over you. Listen to what this doctor is saying, because I think they're really genuine and skilled enough to be of help to you, rather than overlooking those things that you really need to pay attention to so that you can survive and thrive.
Well, thank you. You said something really relevant, many things, of course, this evening, but certainly the point about seeing a podiatrist when you're having a problem with your feet, because it is not to your advantage to perform an amputation. You need that person to have feet so that you can take care of them. And so I think that serves as an important reminder for us that the person who would be most interested in really, really trying to salvage and to save those limbs would be that podiatrist. So we're so glad that you and your colleagues are available to us. Now, I'm sure many people are maybe somewhat challenged about receiving services from a podiatrist, and they don't have insurance. Can you talk with us about the place particularly that you're working now? I know you've worked in a number of different settings, but you're presently working in a setting that I think people need to know about, particularly those who don't have insurance, to know that it is possible to receive the type of treatment that they need. So Dr. Sella Robinson, can you tell us about where you work and that type of facility?
Absolutely. When you hear the acronym FQHC, it stands for Federally Qualified Healthcare Center. And that means that the location where I work receives federal dollars so that nobody is turned away, whether you have insurance or not. Now, one of the things we do have on staff is somebody who's highly qualified to identify what insurance policy you do qualify for based on whatever your circumstances are. But nobody is turned away from our clinic. And I absolutely love and adore that, because anybody can find themselves in circumstances where they may not have insurance currently and are stuck between a rock and a hard place. They need to get attention sooner than later before it becomes much more complicated. And our clinic will welcome you with open arms. It's Outreach Community Health Center, and it's located at 210 West Capitol Drive. So if anybody is familiar with Capitol Drive, you know that there is a store there that's kind of outstanding. It's called the Outpost. Well, my Outreach Community Health Center is pretty much right next door. So I say those two outhouses are side by side. So if you know where the Outpost is, you will be able to find Outreach Community Health Center. And I'm very grateful and very proud to be working at a place under the leadership of Connie Palmer and the type of staff that we have there that are just absolutely amazing and very focused on patient care. We're giving out the coronavirus vaccinations Monday through Friday, 8 in the morning till 5 in the evening. We'd like for you to have an appointment to get it, but if you walk in the door and say, I need that shot, somebody's going to see to it that you get that shot. And if you haven't already gotten your vaccine, please beat it on over there and make sure you get that done. We've been testing for coronavirus since the pandemic first hit, and that testing is still available. And quiet as it's kept, the pandemic is not over until everybody is vaccinated. We beat polio years ago. This isn't the same kind of thing, but it is, in so many words. We need to get vaccinated. And so I would definitely look forward to taking care of anybody who has problems with their feet at our Outreach Community Health Center, located at 210 West Capitol Drive, and that's Milwaukee. The phone number over there is 906-5306. That is area code 414-906-5306. I'm the only foot doctor there, so if you call and say, I want an appointment with the foot doctor because you forgot that my name was Dr. Settle Robinson, they will know exactly who you're talking about when you say the foot doctor. I'm the only one there. And I would be more than happy to take care of you.
Hey, yes. Dr. Robinson, this is Kwazi. I got a question for you. Well, two. And I was just wondering, one, I think the Running Rebels, that's right across the street from where you are?
Yes, they are. And, yes, they are.
And I was just wondering, with that organization being right across the street, them catering to a lot of young men and their families, have they... you know, been there to, you know, have they reached out to you or do they understand that the foot issues, you know, because you got a lot of young people that are being mentored there and health is just such a major part of it. And when we listen to, you know, our ancestor, Dr. Mildred Dixon, when she talked about, you know, our health and how we move around in our feet, you know, our soul from top to bottom and stuff. And this is what we stand and walk on every day if we're able. And have you reached out to them or do they know about you since that, you know, being that close? And with the numbers being so low as far as being, you know, African-American doctors and stuff like that, because I don't know a whole lot about foot doctors. I mean, I've never seen one myself. And I used to fight full contact karate and I'd had many a foot injuries. From kickboxing and just other athletics. And then the other thing I wanted to bring up is I hear about gout. A lot of people talking about that. And, you know, is that something that you run into? And is that something, dietary issues or, you know, a combination of things?
Okay, I'm going to start with the first one, which was the Running Rebels. And I do know about the Running Rebels. They have been in touch with our leadership, Dr. Connie Palmer. They have not been in touch with me personally. They may not know anything about me. I don't know. But I'm certainly listed on the Outreach Community Health Center website. So if they wanted to find out about a foot doctor at Outreach, they would probably just look at the Outreach Community Health Center website. And I would certainly welcome any one of those young men that have problems with their feet. Now, as far as black foot doctors are concerned, you are absolutely right. There are so few black foot doctors in the state of Wisconsin. I can tell you that I'm located at Outreach. Dr. Valerie D. Hairston is located at Milwaukee Health Service, which is Isaac Cogs MLK. Dr. Teresa Gray is located at Progressive, which is also a federally qualified health care center. Dr. Warren McIver is in private practice. Dr. Mexton Deacon is in private practice, also in the city of Milwaukee. Outside the city of Milwaukee in West Bend, but affiliated with Aurora Healthcare, is Dr. Thurman Lanier. There is one other lady, Dr. Regina Flippin, who has since relocated to the island, and Dr. Darcia Merritt, who has relocated to the south with her husband after she remarried. And so actually there's only five of us in the city of Milwaukee, six if you include my brother in West Bend, and I guess technically in terms of who has licenses, it would be eight, but those other two are no longer really practicing in this area. So, yeah, there's very few black doctors. Now, the final part was about gout. Gout is one of those conditions that causes significant pain, and its favorite joint is what I call the bunion joint, because whenever people get bunions, the big toe tends to drift toward the smaller toes, and that bone sticks out really big right at the base of the big toe. And that's the joint that the gout tends to cause problems. You can get severe pain, swelling, sometimes even a certain amount of redness that could potentially be confused with an infection, because infections do the same thing, but it is in fact gout. And we determine whether or not it's gout with a blood test. And it can be managed with medication and with dietary changes. There are those things in your diet that are considered to be the rich man's diet that contribute to gout. So if you just eliminate those things from your diet, you can lower your potential for recurrence. But getting rid of gout with medicine doesn't guarantee that you'll never get it again. Many people have to go on a pill for the rest of their life to keep from getting it back. But yeah, there are dietary changes that you can make that will help minimize your risk of another gout attack. Gout attacks are unpredictable.
I guess if I could just kind of add something, I went to a basketball clinic, a friend of mine's, Carlton Butts, he did the Lady Scholars. And, so it's a team out of Milwaukee, but they had a trainer from the San Antonio down and speak with some of the players. And one of the things he talked about, he said that San Antonio, and that's when they had won the championship, but prior to the years of winning, the players were having serious ankle foot problems. And one of the things he did was remedy that problem was he had them training barefooted. And so I'm just wondering, is there something to be said about that? You know, training barefooted on surfaces here and there when you talk about germs, bacteria, and things like that. I know you talked about cleansing and all those type of things, but you see a lot of people barefooted running and stuff like that. But then at the same time, when you talk about our runners out of Kenya and stuff like that, you know, running barefooted and, you know, and there's pluses and minuses with wearing shoes. Just your thoughts on that and with the work that you do?
Yeah, there's good and bad to everything. The pluses might be that you do build up a certain thick skin on your feet when you don't have the protection of proper shoe gear. But of course, the minuses are you're much more prone to getting injury when your feet are exposed like that. And like you identified, picking up certain germs that you wouldn't be exposed to if you had on shoes and socks like you should be wearing, even when you're practicing. There are certain martial arts that I know are routinely performed barefooted, but I just, you know, wish that they had at least some kind of taping or something to protect their feet, if not socks, to keep them from running into problems. But, you know, the art is the art, and there are certain sacrifices that you make. There's good and bad to everything. I mean, I've been watching the Olympics and the tryouts for the last couple of days, and oh my goodness, we have some strong athletes from the United States that are headed to the Olympics, and a lot of those particular skills are done barefooted. So,
Simone Biles. There again,
oh yes. But you have to know that the environment that they are performing in is very clean, and their circumstances are very protected. They're not running around on janky, dirty circumstances. Those are very clean mats that they run and perform on. And so there's a lot to be said for that. And that's all I got to say about that.
Okay, well, thank you.
So,
Dr. James, you were about to say something.
Well, I appreciate hearing that information about gout, because that certainly is a very commonly asked question. What would you just tell us would be probably your most common condition for which patients are seeking your services?
Probably the most common source of pain in the foot has to do with toenails. People end up with thick toenails, ugly toenails. I oftentimes will tell them, if it hurts your eyes, I don't bother it. But if it hurts your feet, and when the nails get thick enough, it does hurt their feet, then those are the ones that I start talking about, you know, advanced therapies. Otherwise, I see if I can't just reduce the thickness of the nails with what I call debridement, or just trimming them down to where they're back to a normal shape, normal thickness, and then test those specimens for the presence of fungus and put them on antifungus medicine. And it's the ones that are just too far gone that I like to talk to them about permanent surgical removal of those toenails that are just beyond repair, beyond recovery. So I think that's very common. I think pain in the heel is another really, really common condition that people come to me about. And oftentimes it's related to what a condition called plantar fasciitis. Plantar fasciitis is inflammation of the band of tissue that connects from the heel to the ball of your foot, and it is about as strong as the band of tissue can be without being bone, because part of its job is to maintain the arch of your foot. And if you see how people's feet tend to flatten out and become very badly shaped, that plantar fascia has probably been stressed and maybe torn. But 95 out of every 100 people that come in with that condition don't need surgery. They will recover from some of the other things, non-surgical, that I could recommend that they do that will keep them from having that problem with pain. But the biggest thing is you pay attention to who's likely to get plantar fasciitis. people who are very much overweight, people who are in their third trimester of pregnancy, for kind of the same reason, because they're gaining a pound every week, and that puts a lot of stress on the plantar fascia of the feet. And then people who are runners, because every time they land while they are running, they multiply their body weight 8 times. That's the impact that's on the feet. And so they're not going to stop running. But what they need to do is have the kind of insoles that optimize the function of the feet, very much like eyeglasses optimize the function of the eye. I tell people all the time, you can see without glasses, but you can see much better with glasses. Just like you can walk without those insoles, but you can walk much better with the insoles. And both of them are pricey. They run like $300 thereabouts, whether you're talking about prescription glasses or prescription insoles. So what are the alternatives? Very much like you can go to Walgreens or some of the other drugstores and pull some glasses off the shelf and wear them and have them improve your eye function, maybe not to the degree that prescriptive glasses that are custom made for your specific eyes, but if you can see better using those off-the-shelf glasses, that's better than not using anything at all. Because when you don't use prescription glasses or at least some support for your eye function, people tend to strain their eyes and they get headaches all the time. And the moment they get their glasses, they stop getting the headaches. Well, very much in the same way, when your feet are functioning without the support that they need, you end up with foot pain. You get those orthotics. It optimizes the function of your feet, and the foot pain goes away. So that's one of the things that is offered in general for people who are having problems with foot function.
That is very helpful. Now, the one that certainly brought me to the podiatrist at a young age is, in fact, at age 8, was athlete's foot. And you mentioned that a little bit in testing for fungus, but could you go into that as a condition that warrants the evaluation and management by a podiatrist?
Yes, ma'am. Just like you can get fungus in the toenails, you can get fungus in the skin of your feet. People need to recognize that on a daily basis, about 10,000 dead skin cells are coming off of your body. That's why you need to bathe every day to knock off the bulk of those dead skin cells. So if you ever noticed a beam of light coming into your house and you saw those little fine particles in the air, I know the first time that I paid attention to it, and I noticed some of them were like little squiggly lines, but the majority of them were just little particles. I was thinking, oh, God, am I breathing that stuff? And the answer is yes. 90% of the dust in your house is your dead skin cells. So if you have only one person living in your house, that's 10,000 dead skin cells a day. Two people living in your house, that's 20,000, and it goes up from there. And so the dust that settles on your shoes and into your shoes has fungus in it, because the other 10% of that dust is fungus and dust mites and fibers from your clothes, because your clothes shed too. That's what makes all that stuff in the dryer, the lint in your dryer. It's from your clothes shedding as well. Inside your shoes is the high friction environment. And I know you've all had the experience of bathing, and I know I scrubbed good. And then you go to dry off, and here's some, you know, a layer of skin curling up and rolling off of you while you're drying off. And you're like, well, what is that? How come that's coming off? And I know I scrubbed good, because you lose so much dead skin. Now, inside your shoes is a high friction environment. And people say, I wear socks, but your socks are not an impermeable barrier unless you're wearing rubber socks or plastic socks like people put on gloves, rubber gloves. So anything that's coming off of your feet is getting into your shoes, and vice versa. Anything that's in your shoes is getting onto your feet. So between the dust that collects in your shoes when you're not wearing them and the dead skin that comes off of your own body when you are wearing your shoes, all of that accumulates inside of your shoes. And as you walk, it gets flung down to the toe part of your shoe because of your walk. And so people don't recognize that that's where all of that stuff collects. They take off their shoes and they look at the heel part and they say, oh, my shoes are clean, but you can't see down there where your toes live. So I tell people that they need to clean out the insides of their shoes regularly. Think about it. That's the only thing you wear that you never wash. I mean, coats are separated from you by your sweaters, your regular clothes, your underclothes. And still people will go and get their coats cleaned every so often. But nobody cleans out the insides of their shoes. And your insides of your shoes are in far more intimate contact with your feet than your coat or some of the other things that you wear. You need to clean out the inside of your shoes. Put some rubber gloves on and dip your rag or whatever it is you're going to wear, use. Into a basin of bleach water, one part bleached and 10 parts water, and then wring that rag out and then use that to wipe out the inside of your shoes, especially down in the toe area. The very first time you do that with your favorite pair of shoes that you've been wearing for God knows how long, you'll pull out so much stuff that you'll be thinking to yourself, no wonder my toenails look like that. You know, if you had to lay up against that all the time, you'd be looking crazy, too. So all that stuff collects inside your shoes. Yes, you need to clean out the inside of your shoes. And it's so important to do that, that I tell people I could give you the most fabulous, most expensive antifungus medicine on the planet. And if you don't clean out the inside of your shoes, it will not make a difference. Because it's like stepping out of a pile of dirt, taking the time to get every little piece of dirt off of your feet, and then putting your feet right back into the pile of dirt. You got to clean out the inside of your shoes, and it makes such a big difference that you could almost get some generic stuff off the shelf at the dollar store that's an antifungal, and it would help get rid of the fungus because you are cleaning up the world that your feet live in. And while you're cleaning up your shoes, don't forget your bedroom slippers and all the other things that come into contact with your feet. You shouldn't be wearing your socks more than once before you wash. And put some bleach in there with the detergent and wash those socks. What about my dark socks? If you have to replace your dark socks every so often, be grateful for the fact that the other socks lasted you as long as they did. Get you some new ones. I heard a man trying to mentor a younger brother, and he said, in so many words, he said, man, I got drawers older than you. I was like, ooh, wait a minute now. I know some of us do, but that's not something you want to brag about. If your drawers are that old, get rid of them and get you some new drawers.
Oh, my goodness. Dr. Robinson?
Yes.
Yeah, real quick, could you speak real quick on acupuncture as a technique to try to help facilitate therapy of feet? Do people ever think about acupuncture at all?
Okay, so now that's dipping into another area that is not my area of expertise.
Oh, okay, sorry.
I know that there are people who specialize in acupuncture because that is an art that was developed in our Asian culture that was brought to the United States. And it does make a big difference to reduce pain. Basically, they're sticking needles into certain pressure points or trigger points, and it helps to relieve a lot of the discomfort that people come in complaining of chronically, which is preferred over getting yourself addicted to some opiates. Or a lot of the other things people will tell me, they drink or they smoke because they have pain that they can't get rid of any other way. Well, if they could find somebody that could do some acupuncture, maybe that will keep them from having to be addicted to things that are going to cause a lot more problems than just getting stuck with a needle. So that's not my area of expertise. So I'm sorry, I can't give you any more information than that.
Thank you.
You are very welcome. How much time do we have left, Doc?
Well, I see we've got a call, 414-758, 414-758. Do you have a question or a comment for Dr. Settle Robinson? Okay, that might be a listener. So we've got a little bit more time okay. Before.
Well, good. I'll give you an example of a couple of patients that I have that have run into difficulties along the way. I will use that example to explain about diabetic neuropathy. I know people have heard that term, diabetic neuropathy. So I talked about the fact that your feet are farther from your heart than any other part of your body. Well, the smallest blood vessels in your feet are the ones that go up to the skin and the ones that feed the nerves, because the nerves in your feet are the tiniest structures in your feet. So those tiniest blood vessels, or capillaries as we call them, are the first ones to go because they're the most vulnerable, because they're the smallest. And so oftentimes when we're looking at people's feet, I'm looking for whether or not they still have hair growing on their toes. If they don't have any hair growing on their toes, I know that those capillaries have already been compromised. And so I will check them for what we call protective sensation. And it's just a little piece of plastic that I use to just touch their skin. And I have them compare the response to how they can feel on their hands. So when they lose that ability to feel that little tiny piece of plastic, which is called a Sims-Weinstein monofilament. If they can't feel that, then I identify in my notes that they have loss of protective sensation. Now, what's the big deal with the loss of protective sensation? Now, somebody that doesn't have any loss of protective sensation, if they step on a tack, they jump and ooh, scream and holler, oh, Lord Jesus. And then reach down and check to see where did they hurt themselves? Is it bleeding? Can I fix it? Can I clean it? Can I put a Band-Aid on it? Some antiseptic. Whereas the person that has loss of protective sensation might step on that tack and keep on walking. There was a lady that told me that that was her husband's circumstances. Walking around barefooted at home, stepped on a tack, that tack stayed in his foot for a couple of weeks, and he ended up with an infection that was so bad that it translated into an amputation. Now, there's a huge difference between, ow, I stepped on something sharp, and walking on it indefinitely. So I try to teach my patients, when I see that they have some loss of protective sensation, I try to talk to them about how important it is to look at your feet every day. Now, if he had just looked at his feet that night, he would have seen, oh, dang, I got a tack in my foot. I didn't even feel it. I might need to go and do something about it, or at least I need to take care of it, pull the tack out, starting with square one, which he didn't do for a couple of weeks. I had another patient that came in, and I said, well, what made you decide to come in now? And his response was, I was drying off my feet, and I felt two holes in my feet. You felt two holes in your feet when you were drying your feet. Apparently, not only did he never look at the bottom of his feet, but he wasn't really feeling the bottom of his feet, because those holes didn't just magically appear out of nowhere just because he dried his foot. They've been there for a long time, and all of the conditions that led up to him having holes in the bottom of his feet. The first time I stepped on, stepped funny and ooh, that hurt. I'm looking at my foot to see, is it the bone or what's going on with my feet? He couldn't feel that. He couldn't feel anything. You know what was ultimately his problem? He was wearing shoes too small. He never had his feet measured. And I said, what size shoes do you wear? He says, size 12D. And I said, why do you wear size 12D? Because that's the largest size the store carries. And I said, did it ever dawn on you that you don't have size 12D feet? And see, as long as he could squeeze his feet into those shoes, he went on about his business. He couldn't feel that they were too tight. So I just had him stand on a plain piece of white paper, and I traced the shape of his foot, not trying to make his foot any bigger than what they were. And I took the shoe to see, can I cover this foot with this shoe? Because I didn't have a Brannock device to measure the size of his foot. And the shoe would not cover his foot. I said, I want you to go to Stan's Fit for Your Feet, which is the local store that I know has a Brannock device, B-R-A-N, like Raisin Bran, N-O-C-K, like you're knocking on a door, but you take the first K off and leave the last one on. Brannock device, and have them measure your feet. He came back and said, they told me I wore size. I'm sorry. They told him he wore size 14 triple E. So now the number is the length of your foot. The letter is the width of your foot. B is medium. C is medium wide. I should mention that A is narrow. D is extra wide. No, I'm sorry. D is wide. And then E is extra wide. And you can go all the way up to five E's, just like you can go all the way down to five A's. And if you have feet that are shaped different from the average, you need to be getting your shoes at a place that specializes in carrying shoes that don't fit the average people. They're outside of that average. I mean, they'll carry the average too. So if you have average feet, you can get your shoes there too. But they will carry whatever size shoe your feet need to wear. I think the largest feet I ever saw were size 23 and a half triple E, and that was on a basketball player.
Wow. Well, Dr. Robinson, I'm going to have to make another sponsor announcement, if you could just hold off for a second. We do.
Absolutely.
Okay. EDOC advice, we do. EDOC advice, we do provide specific medical answers to those seeking a better understanding about medical conditions and health. We offer our faculty of EDOCs, who are licensed physicians and health professionals, who make themselves available to those globally seeking a better understanding of health issues and medical practices. Again, that's at EDOC advice www.edoc.com. Yes, this was a wonderful program. I'll turn it over to Dr. James. Dr. James?
We are at that time, and Dr. Stella Robinson, we are most appreciative of your coming and offering all of these pearls, this wisdom about the care of our feet and saving our limbs. And we thank all of our listeners for joining us today. I thank also the Sankofa Council for its support of this program and for sharing their vision for unity following Afrocentric principles and helping us to learn and use those principles in our lives. We look forward to bringing to you more programs that we hope you will enjoy. Visit our sponsor, www.edocadvice.com. Good night. Stay safe. Thank you, Brother Kwazi, Sister Dee Dee, and the Sankofa family. For all of you, stay safe till next time.